The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
It's part of temperance, which is one of the four cardinal virtues, temperance, right? We're learning how to have moderation, temperance, and part of that is, again, you are learning how to have mastery over the flesh.
Right. Right. So I'm reminded too where Paul says, like, why am I doing something that I don't want to do, but I can't do the things that I want to do? And I have found personally that food fasting has helped to do those things that my soul really does long for, right? The call to holiness. And it just helps keep the flesh in check.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, good to be with you today. We're talking about something that may not seem that pleasant, something you may not even want to do, but I'll tell you what, if you do it, you will be glad you did. Maggie, my producer, and I were just talking during the news. And Maggie, why don't you open your mic very quickly if you could, and then we'll go back to Dr. Jay Richards. You and I were talking about fasting, and I said, yeah, it's one of the things I'm going to do during Lent. But Maggie, can I share what you do during Lent? You only have one meal a day throughout all of Lent. You fast. Why don't you share what you just shared with me? I thought it was kind of cool.
Well, yeah, I started practicing fasting a couple of years ago pretty, like, seriously. And I found that, you know, when I focus on one meal a day, I really want that meal to be packed full of vitamins and vegetables and good lean meats. And, like, so you really start to, your thought process shifts. Instead of thinking about what you're giving up and what you're missing out on, after about a week of that, then you're like, oh, wow, this one meal is so important. It's so delicious. I'm so thankful for this one meal. It really does shift your spirit at some point. It's great.
I love that. And it's a great thing to do because, you know, that you're clearly doing intermittent fasting, but it's great for the body. I know you said that when you're done this, you felt you could do anything. After a few weeks, you got all that stuff out of your system. You've detoxed. And, you know, the things you once really hungered for or desired, they were no longer there, which is kind of great.
Yeah, and it's actually funny because the first couple years that I did it, I really looked forward to Easter brunch, right?
Yeah.
But I'm almost at a point now when Easter comes around, it's almost a more measured response. I'm not like, oh, I can't wait to stuff my face with this stuff. I'm like, oh, yeah. I'm kind of sad that the challenge is over now. And yes, I will enjoy this wonderful meal, but it's almost like you're kind of sad that that this period is over and you kind of take it into the next chapter of your life.
Psychologically, I hate getting off the fast. Like when I go past the hardest hours are for me is if I start, around dinner time, if I get past the first 16 hours, if I can go 24 hours, I'm set. 36 hours, I feel great. But you know, if I get to 40, part of me doesn't want to stop because I've gone so far. My body's in autophagy now. You know, I'm thinking, oh, I'm killing it.
Yeah, your brain is
sharp. But it's awesome. My guest today, Dr. Jay Richards, is an expert on this, author of the book Eat, Fast, Feast, Healing Your Body While Feeding Your Soul, a Christian guide to fasting. A good read, and it will help you, and you can tap into what Maggie was just sharing. Doctor, it's good to be with you. Let's jump into the phones. We'll take a few calls. I may have to have you back to talk more about the spiritual benefits. There's a lot of calls here that people have regarding health. Denise in Rhode Island, good afternoon.
Hi. I was wondering how to combat the hangry feeling. I can go without food and not be hungry, but I find myself getting angry.
That is a almost universal problem to have to get over. As you said, hangry, it's that sort of combination. And, you know, I hate to say it, but part of it is actually adapting your metabolism because that happens essentially because if you were to sort of take your blood sugar levels throughout the day when you're eating normally, the blood sugar goes up and down, and about every 4 hours it drops. And so your body is just desperately wanting you to bump the blood sugar up. And that's a result of having basically a carbohydrate-rich diet in which your body's not using fat for fuel. And so in my book, I describe in this plan essentially over a six-week period, you spend a week eating ketogenically, which just means, this sounds crazy to people, but you eat a really, really high fat, really, really low carbohydrate diet. So you don't have to, you're not restricting calories. You're just basically telling your body, get the fuel from fat because I'm not going to give you any carbohydrates. that shifts your metabolism. I mean, think of your body as like a hybrid car, like a Prius, and it uses up all the fuel in the gas tank. You've used up all your carbs. Now your body's got to use fat. Once it's in that state, then your blood sugar is not going up and down every 4 hours. It actually levels off, and you just don't have that feeling. And so that's why this just literally training your metabolism is a key part, both overcoming that hangry feeling, but also sustaining longer fast.
Yeah, thank you, Denise. I'll give you a little bit of advice. I read an article by Dr. Scott Hahn recently, brilliant guy, and he quoted a saint, I think it was St. Maximus the Confessor, who pointed out that if you become miserable while you're eating, you know, less food, while you're fasting, you're really fasting. He says what you need to do is confront those struggles, he says. And then he says, you know, maybe modify your fast so it doesn't cause more harm than good. But, you know, like you said, doctor, it's a process. You just got to tweak it till you get to that point where you can go the day or the amount of time that you need to go. Anne is listening in St. Paul, Minnesota. She wants to ask you a question, too. Hi, Anne.
Hi, how are you? Okay. I want to start off by saying I have the book, and I was planning on doing the six-week fast. So, my question is... I'm trying to get my husband on board. Of course, well, I don't know how hard that is. And he's thin. And I know that sometimes when you do the ketogenic diet, many people lose weight. And I'm wondering how just increasing the fat instead of because I know you have to kind of balance your fat and your proteins. If you don't eat enough protein, you're going to lose muscle mass. So would just balancing or increasing the fat help with him to not lose weight, or would to increase
Absolutely.
The protein help him to not lose weight?
Yeah, and so he doesn't need to add protein. And so most of us, as long as you're getting normal protein sources and you're eating meat, he's almost certainly going to get enough protein. But what people don't tend to do, especially if they're thin, is they just don't add fat. You know, this idea that you can add a bunch of coconut oil or a bunch of olive oil to a steak, it seems counterintuitive, but if he has a tendency to lose weight, that's exactly what he needs to do, and it'll solve that problem.
All right,
okay.
Hey, thank you.
And then I had another.
Go ahead, Anne.
Can I add a quick question about autophagy?
Please, go right ahead. Sure.
I have Dr. Bosworth's book, and she says a 16:8 will that you can establish autophagy with just a 16:8. And what is your opinion on that?
Yeah, and so there's,
hours,
I mean,
yeah,
16, exactly. So a 16-hour fast. And so we know it's somewhere in the middle, and so the data's a little bit mixed. I'm absolutely confident that you're going to be in autophagy 36 hours out. If you're eating ketogenically, so your body's actually in ketosis, I suspect that it probably does kick in at about 12 to 16 hours. But yeah, I think you probably have to have your metabolism in working order in order to benefit from autophagy that short of a fast.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds great.
Okay. Well, thank you so much.
I appreciate it. Anne's on top of it. She's got their books and great questions.
That's great.
Matt in La Crosse, Wisconsin. Hi, Matt. You're on the air with Dr. Richards.
I do. Thanks. First time caller, so I apologize if I'm a little nervous here. But
that's fine.
I've used intermittent fasting. I guess I've done it several times before with pretty good results every time. Mm-hmm. I don't know if this is a word of caution or just a struggle that I had personally, but I would only eat once a day, typically, you know, after 4 o'clock in the afternoon, but I would eat a lot. So one word of caution is I almost trained my mind to eat these huge portions. So when I got back to where I was exercising and kind of easing back into a regular diet, I had almost trained myself to eat larger portions. So that, that's one thing. I mean, I'm heading into Lent. I'm going to try this again. I guess I originally started it due to an injury. I couldn't exercise. And when I was able to resume my exercise routine, I was still fasting. So I noticed I was getting into ketosis rather quickly, and I was losing some muscle mass, but I just heard your comment about adding oil to meat. That's something that I didn't do, so I'd have to do that differently this time.
Yeah, and it's counterintuitive. I mean, I'm a fitness guy, and so I've been for years all about protein, but I'm now convinced that most of us, as long as we're eating a normal diet where we're getting normal sources of protein, especially animal protein, we're not probably deficient there. But if you're losing weight, it's almost always, ironically, it's the result of not having enough fat. If you're eating ketogenically, of course, that's not something you want to do if you're also eating four bowls of cereal a day.
Yeah, that's true.
Right. Matt,
thank you.
And lots of gum. You need lots of gum if you're going to be getting into ketosis.
That, and water. Gum and water. I'm with
a lot of water.
Oh, I appreciate it. Hey, Matt, good to hear from you. I'm glad you called in. Look forward to hearing from you again. On the oil thing, coconut oil has been the rage lately. Mm-hmm. Is that exceptionally good, or what kind of oils do you recommend? Olive, or does it matter?
Yeah, so basically, if you're cooking and you want to heat it up, then you want an oil that is solid at room temperature. So something like butter or coconut oil, which is a plant oil, is really good for that. Olive oil is, of course, terrific, avocado oil, but those have sort of low smoke points, and so they can end up, you know, smoking. And so that's the basic rule, is natural fats. Use ones that are liquid at room temperature when you're not cooking on salads and things like that. And then use ones that are solid at room temperature for your cooking.
Sounds great. Barbara's listening in Dallas, Texas. Barbara, good afternoon.
Hi. Well, I have fasted before, but it was like I'm bread and water, and it doesn't always agree with my digestive system. I do it on Fridays. And I'm trying to, I think I'll try this thing. I'm on the water between the meals. Like I would eat, would you say before 4 o'clock a meal, and then do not eat until the next day till 4?
All right, well, good question, Barbara. Let's break this down because I have a moment left. Some final thoughts from you on this. For those who are saying, I'm going to try fasting, doctor, what's the best way to do that? Maybe you can answer Barbara with that question as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, I would say ease in. And so if you're trying one meal a day, that's basically, you're basically going 23 hours not eating and then an hour eating. That's hard. And so I would recommend not starting there. And that's why in my plan for a week, you just eat ketogenically normally. Then you go to 16-8. So you eat all your food within an 8-hour window, and then you go 16 hours. Then you narrow it to 20 hours off, and then eat all your meals within a 4-hour period. And then you get to that stage where you're doing 23 off and 1 hour, basically one big meal a day. You really need to ramp up to that in order to do these longer fasts. And the real hump is that 36-hour window, because to go 36 hours without eating, that means you basically need to go to sleep, go all day, and then go to sleep a second night without having eaten. That's really the hump to get over. For most people, once you can get beyond 36, you can actually do several days, believe it or not.
That's so true. Well, I want to thank you for your time, doctor. Great to have you here. The book, Eat Fast, Feast, Heal Your Body While Feeding Your Soul, A Christian Guide to Fasting. I'm assuming it's available at all major bookstores. Best way to get it?
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on, Drew.
I look forward to it. Let's talk again throughout Lent. We didn't even touch the spiritual benefits of this, but I'm always grateful for your expertise. So thanks for being here.
Yeah, anytime. Let's talk again. All right.
Have a great Ash Wednesday. That's Dr. Jay Richards, expert on fasting. I will give you much more information on this in the days ahead. I'm going to take a short pause, though. We are called to pray and fast for an end to the conflict that we're seeing in the Ukraine. When I come back, maybe you should pray for Vladimir Putin especially. You know, he does have that nuclear arsenal, and many now are questioning his mental stability. Is it a byproduct of the pandemic? Is he paranoid? Is there some sort of degeneration going on or something else? We'll look at that and more. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Well, thanks for being here. Thanks for joining me. That's a good bumper, too, Maggie. It's a little pink, I think, I hear in the background there. We got a lot to get into this afternoon. One of the things that I want to be very careful about talking about, because I'm not the expert on it, we will speak to an expert about this, is Vladimir Putin's mental health. I mean, and I want to be careful. I'm going to ask you to pray for him. He certainly needs our prayer. The Holy Father is asking us to fast and to pray for a conversion, you know, for peace in the world. Let's pray for the end of war, for protection, that the world will never see the use of nuclear weaponry. But here's a very blunt question that's being asked by a lot of people around the world. Is the Russian president in his right mind? The answer increasingly is no, he's not. And there's been a battery of people who are saying that. Here's a montage of reports about the American public skepticism of Biden's, not Biden's, of Putin's mental health. But before I go to that, I'll just share with you what some very competent, very high-ranking people have encountered. The Secretary of State, Condoleezza Rice, she told Fox News that that Putin was always calculating and cold, but this is different, that he seems erratic, that there is an ever-deepening delusional rendering of history. We saw his rant recently, right? That it was always a kind of victimology about what happened to them, right? Now he's going back to even blaming Lenin about the foundation of Kyiv in Ukraine. That's what Condoleezza Rice said. That's what she said. Rice has met with, of course, Putin on a half a dozen times. And she said, not me, she said, he is descending into something I haven't personally seen before. She's not the only one who said that. Now, the British Defense Secretary, Ben Wallace, he told Sky News, no one else in their right mind would do what we're seeing today, right? Never. He says, no one else would impose their will on another sovereign nation with all sorts of concocted conspiracies and very bizarre readings of history unless somehow they were acting deeply irrational, right? That's the Britain's Defense Secretary, Ben Wallace. Michael McFaul, the former ambassador to Russia under Obama, he said in a tweet, he says this, quote, I've watched and listened to Putin over 30 years. He has changed. He sounds completely disconnected from reality. He sounds unhinged. So the former ambassador to Russia says that Putin is unhinged, that he's changed. Senator Marco Rubio of Florida, who sits on the Senate Intelligence Committee, he sees all sorts of stuff come across his desk, right? Yesterday, he hinted that he is seeing things in the intelligence reports that show, and again, I want to quote him, not my words, but his, something, quote, something is off with Putin, is what he said. He says, it would be a mistake to assume Putin would react the same way he would have 5 years ago. And he says, I wish I could share more. He wish he could say more. That's Senator Rubio. We know of other world leaders, right? I had shared with you the president of France, Emmanuel Macron, trying to be the intermediary before Russia ever crossed Ukrainian borders. He came back saying the same thing. Putin is not the same. There's something different. CNN was reporting today that that intelligence agencies here in the U.S. are asking the same question. Not just me speculating, may not be you. They're asking, is Vladimir Putin okay? Is he stable? Is he sane? That's the word they're using. Somehow CNN got hold of some raw intelligence reports, and those say that, well, Putin's behavior has become highly concerning and unpredictable just over the last 2 days. Think about what's going on, though. I mean, his troops are mired right now. Ukraine's putting up a fight like they never saw. He has solidified and unified and emboldened and enlivened NATO, unlike anything he's seen. He didn't want NATO on his doorstep. He now has it, right? He's got Zelensky, who's become a national and really a worldwide hero, a man who's just, he's David standing up against Goliath right now. And then you've got Putin under all these sanctions, you know, his personal money, as well as the oligarchs that surround him, his economy, the ruble is in the basement right now. His economy's in trouble. So you can see that this did not play out like he thought it would. That CNN report, just as a final note here, they say that officials have, quote, been on guard for the possibility that Putin's strategy may well be to project instability in an attempt to push a U.S. and allies to give him what he wants for fear that he could do worse. So I just want to throw that on the table, too. Is he a great actor? Is he playing the role so that the rest of the world says, oh, my gosh, this guy has, he's got nuclear weapons. We don't want to push him too far. What if? You know, how stable is he? Maybe Putin's playing everybody. Maybe he's just brilliant. Maybe he's saying, you know what? I'm going to let them think that. I'll act this way. You know, I don't know. Other analysts, they believe there's something wrong. And we're going to speak to Dr. Richard Gallagher coming up. get his sense of what's happening. Fiona Hill, the Brookings Institution, is probably one of the best Putin analysts out there. And this morning I saw something that she wrote. She told Politico, she says this, and I'll just quote one sentence. She says, Putin is usually more cynical and calculated than he came across in his most recent speeches. She says, there's evident visceral emotion in things that he said in the past few weeks justifying the war in Ukraine. He says, the pretext is completely flimsy, almost nonsensical for anybody who's not in the echo chamber or the bubble of the propaganda in Russia itself. I mean, demanding that Ukrainian military, that they essentially overthrow their own government, lay down their arms and surrender because they're being commanded to by a bunch of drug-addled Nazi fascists. She says there's no sense to that. And it really beggars the imagination, she says. So that's what's being reported. That's what's being said by world leaders. There are also pictures that are coming out of him. You know, you saw him at these really, really long tables. You know, there's only one person allowed in the room besides the photographer. And, you know, he's been very paranoid when it comes to COVID and a whole litany of other things. So, you know, I'm here just to look at this. I've invited Dr. Richard Gallagher to join me today. He's board certified. He's a psychiatrist and a professor of psychiatry at New York Medical College and Columbia University. And it's good to have him here with me today. Doctor, good afternoon.
Thank you. Nice to be here under difficult world circumstances.
It really is. I appreciate your patience. I'm going to take a break in a moment, but let's start off with your sense. I mean, you're an observer of these things just as the rest of the world is, but you have a keener sense of the psychological. The behavior of Vladimir is erratic, no doubt about that. World leaders are questioning the change. What are you seeing? How are you reading this, and how do you interpret what's being said?
Well, it's certainly always dicey to try to diagnose somebody from a distance. You know, our profession has often been warned against doing that. But it's almost inevitable that people try to explain how this calculating man seems at the moment to have, you know, a decrease in his good judgment. Most of us psychoanalysts would see somebody like him as suffering from both narcissism and sociopathy, which is kind of a fancy term for somebody who has an evil side to them. And this is characteristic of a lot of leaders like Saddam Hussein, Hitler, Stalin. In fact, we call it malignant narcissism. And then the question is, someone in this malignant narcissist state, which I would use about him, under stress can get a little unstable, a little unhinged, a little paranoid, a little grandiose. And I do see that as what he's suffering from now, that his judgment is not good, and he's starting to act erratic.
And yeah, I wonder why. A lot of questions are raised, and what triggered this? You know, he's knocking on the door of being 70, and sometimes mental faculties change, attitudes change, personality can even change. He also was incredibly fearful of getting COVID, as you've seen. He has distanced himself, locked himself up, has been away, has been isolated. Do those environmental things play a role in this? Could it be mental illness or disease? What's your assessment? What would trigger this change in a man who's been cold, calculating, and world leaders have known him as being, you know, very much in control, seems much more emotional today than he has ever?
Well, we're all speculating, and you've mentioned a number of possibilities, such as his age. What I would emphasize is the tremendous stress and isolation he appears to be going through. Mm-hmm. You know, he has, even prior to this, he's had a lot of enemies. And he has the typical response of a tyrant, which is to kind of close the circle, trust fewer and fewer people, isolate himself, including from COVID. So whether it's possible he has some more dramatic, you know, mental disorder, and given his age, is possible. However, I think the main thing that's going on with him is this corrupt, malignant narcissist is responding to a extreme high level of stress and isolation, and that in itself is warping his judgment. You know, beyond that, again, you know, to try to diagnose somebody from a distance, can't say too much more than that, I believe.
No, I totally get that. I was reading a little bit about his behavior at the start of the pandemic. He went to extraordinary lengths to avoid catching the virus during a hospital visit. He had a full hazmat suit on. And then, of course, he stayed decidedly out of the public eye during COVID-19. He isolated himself. And as you point out, isolation, and we've seen this in other people as well, isolation during the pandemic could cause an even greater detachment from reality. There was one neuropsychologist claiming that, you know, progressive isolation can lead to what he called a hubris syndrome. I don't know. Maybe he's just malignant. Yeah, or maybe he is a narcissist. And maybe his world is spiraling out of control. Maybe his mental state is being uprooted by a combination of all of these things. I think he's a very close circle around him and doesn't go beyond that. Most of those people don't want to tell him something he doesn't want to see. But, you know, maybe you can speak to this, doctor, because maybe other people see this as well. You know, research early in the pandemic found that there were a number of people who, after testing positive for COVID-19, experienced behavioral changes, including delirium and confusion and agitation. And one study I saw said that COVID-19 infection doubles the risk of psychiatric diagnoses, including depression and anxiety, and affects sleep. So again, we don't know what's going on here, but could this be a possible element? Could it be something as simple as that, or do you just think it's narcissism run wild?
Yeah, I think these are all interesting speculations, and you know, he could be showing signs of early dementia. There could be, you know, something related like to something like COVID. But I think those are guesses and sometimes wild guesses. I think what we do know about this man is that he's always been corrupt. And he's been willing to do reckless things, including assassinate enemies and stuff like that. This is all very characteristic of the syndrome of a severe personality disorder that we call malignant narcissists.
Right.
And malignant narcissists under stress are very prone, because they see the world that way, are very prone to see enemies, to get a little paranoid, and also to react by getting grandiose.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, there are plenty of people who have seen some of his present behavior as suggestive of megalomania. Mm-hmm. So once again, I think what we do know is this is a narcissistic evil man who is descending into some level of paranoia, stress, extreme stress, and grandiosity. You know, beyond that, what else might be going on is interesting to speculate about, but, mm-hmm. you know, then you'd really need a closer examination of him.
So let me ask you your perspective on Vladimir Putin possibly going too far. If he feels he's losing the war, if his money has been shut off, and he feels this is a tremendous attack on Russia. Is it possible that he could go ahead and use nuclear weapons? I mean, he has come out, he's thrown that around in a very, you know, veiled way, if you will. But it has the world wondering, is he stable? And if he's not, he does have his finger on the trigger of weapons of mass destruction. A megalomaniac, somebody who's a narcissist like that, Do you think they would go that far and ultimately use a weapon like that?
Well, again, that gets into, you know, a lot of issues that are more for political experts to speculate about. I would just say that someone under the level of stress he is under, number one, you know, can do erratic things. Yeah. And, you know, it is possible within the realm of an option for him if he feels himself yeah. like a rat cornered. He might do something extreme like, you know, consider the use of yeah. battlefield nuclear weapons. I don't have right. the feeling like he's quite foolish or crazy enough to, you know, start a major nuclear war or something.
Let's hope not.
Because I think he's got to be at least compos mentis enough to know what destruction that would bring upon himself and his country. But having said that, you know, yeah. he's certainly capable of some erratic behavior, escalating his warfare with Ukraine, at least yeah. to a level that is disturbing.
Well, I hope you're right. One of the things I had read earlier today, he's talked about nuclear war, and he once even mused that such a conflict would end, he said, with Russians going to heaven. The enemy not having time to repent. So, again, who knows? I'm just throwing this out. I want your professional, you know, psychiatric opinion of him. Let's take a few calls. We'll let some people ask a few questions to Doctor. My guest, Dr. Richard Gallagher, with news mounting, with national and international officials saying Vladimir Putin has changed. It raises a lot of questions. We're just looking at what has been said and what might be, you know, some of the possible explanations for this, because it's not just an individual that is dealing with a mental challenge or even a disorder. His behavior can affect not just his country, but the world. Art in Munster, Indiana. You're on the air with Dr. Gallagher. Good afternoon.
Hello. First of all, let me say I'm not a doctor, so I'm just throwing this out. Excuse me. I wonder how much of this, if any of it, has to do with our president, with the gaffes that he has, possibly showing signs of dementia, having problems reading off of a teleprompter. Mm-hmm. A lot of these sources and people who are saying this are liberal news stations and liberal government. So are they trying to maybe take some focus away from our president? That's my question.
All right, it's a great question. You know, Doctor, I'll let you respond. I would argue probably not. But to your point about our president, you're right to that point, too. I think we should take the actions of Vladimir Putin very seriously and the things he says, the people that he has encircled, the threats of you know, using weapons and retaliated in a way that would be unprecedented in a nation's history, some of the things Vladimir Putin has warned. I think just out of due diligence, out of vigilance, we should take very seriously and evaluate whether or not he is in the right state of mind. To our own president, too, and we need to pray for Joe Biden just as much. Doctor, I'd like your take. You can respond to Art on that, but his question is, are they trying to take some attention off of the president of the United States? Joe Biden is not threatening nuclear war. In fact, he's trying to avoid one right now. But Joe Biden does show signs of dementia, and he is a masterful at his gaffes, and clearly there are many people who think that he's in decline. Your take on both of these, maybe Joe Biden. Let's pick it up on the president of the United States. How do you see the mental health of Joe Biden? Any concerns about dementia or other problems that he might be manifesting?
Well, I would be very reluctant to comment on the president. He's getting older. I mean, to use the word dementia is beyond, I think, what we truly know about him. He may not be as mentally sharp as he used to be, but I don't think this is some effort to, you know, put the focus on Putin and take it away from him. This is a major world crisis that, you know, he has attempted to get the world united by, and I would be loath as a citizen to attempt to speculate about political motives here.
To your point, though, too, I do think that there is a stark difference between the threats and the behaviors of Vladimir Putin and Joe Biden's gaffes. I mean, they're two different things. And
we're yes, clearly not... I wouldn't compare the pathology of the two men. No. I mean, Putin is a brute. He's a person who, you know, kills his enemies, has bombed and killed literally hundreds of millions of foreigners in Chechnya and Syria. I mean, I don't put him in the category of any American leader.
To that point, let's grab Francis, listening in California. Francis, you're on the air with Dr. Gallagher. Good afternoon. Art, thanks for the call.
Hey, thank you very much, Drew. I appreciate it. And I keep doing what you guys are doing. This is great. First of all, I suspect anything that Condoleezza Rice has to say, they blew the Iraq chemical warfare stuff. But look at the history of Putin. 99, they thought he killed his own people bombing in Russia to go to war with Chechnya, where he killed 25,000 Chechens. He poisoned his own people in 2006 and 2018 in London. Nothing happened. You look at what he did in Syria, same thing with the Iranians and the Syrians. They killed massive civilians. And then this is just a pretext. Again, this is a continuation of the Crimea, of the Baltic areas where he wanted to take over Russia. He's trying to reconstitute Russia. He hasn't changed. He's not insane. He's the same guy he always was. Mm-hmm. And finally, I mean, you look at the last thing. We signed a treaty in 1994 saying we would defend Ukraine if they gave up their nuclear weapons, okay? Yep. And we, again, are falling down on that treaty and that promise to them. Gave up their nukes. So, I mean, and China's watching all this. Again, you can add that to Afghanistan, where we're failing to lead and stop this guy. And now this is what we have. So I'll take my answer off the air. Thanks, Drew.
Francis, I appreciate it. Hard to argue against a lot of that. Your very last point regarding the Ukraine giving up its nuclear weapons in 94. I'm sure they regret that today. I don't know if Vladimir Putin would have come in if he thought they had that type of weaponry. We did make promises. We need to honor those promises. I think Putin clearly... saw the weakness in our current administration, the way we handled Afghanistan, and thought this was a pivotal time to take advantage of it. Doctor, I want to bring you into that conversation, too, because he did say something. Maybe Vladimir Putin, there's nothing wrong at all. And some speculate he's just playing the world leaders. He's as sane and as cagey and as foxy as he has ever been. That's also a possibility, isn't it?
Well, that is a possibility, and I agree with most of what you're last caller said. This is a brutal guy who's been brutal for many, many years, and a leopard doesn't change his spot. The question is whether more recently he's gotten, you know, more rambling in his historical messages to his people about Ukraine, whether he's gotten more erratic in his judgment, such that he's gotten now himself into a situation which, you know, he didn't expect. I do agree with Condoleezza Rice that he may not be the same cold. He's still a cold, calculating guy, and I don't put him in an insane category. I do not.
Yeah.
But I see his judgment as more erratic, and you know, whatever the cause, I see it as a deterioration of a corrupt, somewhat risk-taking man who's now made a major mistake, most likely.
Well, my guest today is Dr. Richard Gallagher, board-certified psychiatrist, a professor of psychiatry at New York Medical College and Columbia University. He also helps discern psychological issues from demonic possession. I would be careful about going there, but there is a priest in Lviv who has started an exorcism process for Vladimir Putin. So how much can the spiritual and the psychological be mixed up in a person's life? Let's explore that when I return.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, Visit relevantradio.com/Forrester.
Well, thanks for joining me. It's always good to take a look at life and some of the biggest, most important issues of the day through the lens of faith, maybe give you a different perspective, something a little different to think about, to ruminate on. And I'd like to bring to you great men, bright thinkers like Dr. Richard Gallagher, who is a board-certified psychiatrist and a professor of psychiatry at New York Medical College and Columbia University. Also, we've spoken in the past with him, to Dr. Aaron Curiati, to others who help discern psychological issues from demonic possession. And I saw a story about a priest in Lviv who started an exorcism, started the process of that on Vladimir Putin. And it raised questions. People are wondering how much of this can be spiritual, how much of it can be psychological. Can the two be mixed in a person's life, especially with the leader? I mean, imagine if, you know, a dark spirit was able to somehow manipulate the leader of a nation with, you know, powerful weaponry, or commit other atrocities. We can make that case in any nation. I mean, you take a look at the blood that's been spilled through abortion, right? We can take a look at the contraceptive mentality, the attack on marriage. We can see how Satan hates family, how he hates marriage, how he hates life. But what about spiritually and psychologically? Let's take it to a whole different level. And doctor, it's good to have you with me. Let's pick up on that particular point. I know you work with the church in helping people discern the psychological from the spiritual in a lot of different cases. One other level is either Vladimir Putin is smart and cagey, or he's struggling with some sort of narcissism or other sort of debilitating mental problem, or maybe there's a mix of these elements. So just to throw that on the mix, and I'm very hesitant to do that because I don't want to claim that Satan is possessing people or he's under every rock. But, with a man who is engaged in the murder of many people, assassinating his opponents, poisoning people, engaged in other illicit or immoral type of activities, it does open you up to the spiritual. So I'd like your take on that. Help me discern that. And how does the church look at this? How do they discern that?
Well, you know, as we've discussed in the past, Mr. Mariani, there are some very complicated issues here. I would say the following with a certain amount of confidence. We don't have evidence that Vladimir Putin is possessed.
Right.
Calling somebody evil, and I think that he is an evil man and has done, as your caller said before, a lot of horrible, brutal things in his life. Calling him an evil man should not be excused by what I was calling personality disorders. But there is an interplay between the psychology and the spirit, such that when we use the word sociopathy, we're often essentially using a psychiatric term for a person who is somewhat consumed by evil. But as Orthodox theologians have always emphasized, you know, people are perfectly capable of, our fallen nature is perfectly capable of being evil on its own. You know, we don't need to posit that somebody is possessed or something like that to rise to the level of the evil actions that Putin is doing. So I don't see evidence, you know, to say that someone is possessed, you need clear signs of possession, like a spirit, you know, controlling him, controlling his body. We don't have that. So In the book I wrote, as you know, we've talked about in the past, Mr. Mariani, one of the conditions that a lot of people mistake for possession, in addition to people who are psychotic and people who are multiple personality and that sort of thing, is that people who have severe personality disorders, to the extent of evil, which is in itself a combination of sort of the spiritual and the psychological, they're often said to be possessed. Like, what possessed this person? But we're using that term much too loosely there. These are evil people are not automatically possessed.
Right, exactly.
That doesn't mean that we all shouldn't say prayers for them, mm-hmm. but that's a very different thing than saying, you know, this is a man who needs to be right. delivered from a possession.
As you know, and as you write about, there are different levels of demonic temptation and, you know, obsession and, you know, possession. I mean, there's I think, four different stages of that. And as you point out, I mean, he's not manifesting those signs of possession. I think you're valid in that. Doctor, there are people who may not be familiar with your book. You and I have talked about it in the past, and it's a fascinating subject. How can people get plugged into it? And why don't you share the title with everyone in case they want to read a little bit more about this?
Well, the title is Demonic Foes. Thank you, Drew. It's the subtitle is A Psychiatrist's 25 Years Investigation of Possessions, Demonic Attacks, and the Paranormal. I mean, it's very easy to get it. You can get it from a lot of bookstores. You can get it from HarperCollins. It's often easiest to just get it from Amazon. It's quite easy to order online.
It's a great read, Demonic Foes. The author, again, Dr. Richard Gallagher. Doctor, I know I only have a moment, and I'm grateful for all the time you spent with me this afternoon. So just let me get some final thoughts from you on this issue in general. The Holy Father, of course, is calling us to pray and to fast for peace in the Ukraine. I want to remind everyone, of course, to do that tomorrow. And I that's my advice. As you see Vladimir Putin or you see Zelensky, no nation is perfect. You take a look at the culture of death that is in the Ukraine, and even as much as I appreciate the bravery and heroism of Zelensky, he's an advocate of abortion. So, I mean, I think spiritually speaking, we really need to respond both with prayer and fasting for an end to this conflict. But I'll give you the final thoughts.
Well, look, a lot of people are flawed. This may not be the week that Mr. Zelensky should be criticized. Yeah. He's shown heroic resistance. All of us need prayers, and all of us are subject to temptation and the frailties of fallen nature. So without judging anybody here, certainly prayers for the situation in Ukraine, while also recognizing the heroism of the Ukrainians, including its leader, yeah. is, I think, warranted.
Well, I'm grateful for your time, Doctor. Always good to talk with you. I appreciate the clarity you bring, the honesty, and really your expertise. The book is called Demonic Foes. That's an easy way to remember. Just type that in, and Dr. Richard Gallagher, it'll pop up, and you can check it out. We'll talk again soon, okay, Doc?
Thank you. A pleasure again to speak to you.
Yeah,
bye-bye.
It's always a delight. Dr. Richard Gallagher there. I think he's right. I think he brought up a really great point. I mean, what we need to do is what the Holy Father has suggested to us, and we need to pray. And if you want to amplify the power of your prayer, you do exactly what he and our U.S. bishops are asking us to do. You fast. Tomorrow is Ash Wednesday. It is one of those days on the church calendar where we are called to pray and to fast. Church only asks really 2 days out of the year for fasting, and that's Good Friday and Ash Wednesday. I am going to fast throughout Lent. That's part of my Lenten resolution. I would encourage you to do the same thing, and let's do it for peace. Let's do it for clarity. A lot of sensationalism out there. The media, anxiety levels, fear, and depression are through the roof as people watch the nonstop coverage of what's unfolding, because not only does it affect them on a very personal level, I mean, when you think about the threat of a global war, maybe even a nuclear war, you can understand that, but I don't always think it's healthy to get that 24/7. I always try to just give you an honest look at issues from multiple sides, from the psychological to the spirituals we just did with Dr. Gallagher here, and to call you to the one thing that will make a difference. And what you do personally with your prayer, with your sacrifice, with your walk with the Lord, will have more impact than any world leader, any military in the world. All right. Let me throw one other thing on the table for you. I want to remind you, because tomorrow's the last day. Well, not really, but tomorrow it begins. Today's a great day to sign up for Father Rocky's Lenten Lessons on the Mass. And if you have not signed up for that, maybe this is the first time you're hearing about them. This is another good thing to add to your Lenten regimen, if you will. When you go to relevantradio.com, you put in your name, you sign up for these lessons, you'll get an email starting tomorrow on Ash Wednesday. And this is free. Nobody's asking anything from you. RelevantRadio.com/Lent. Okay, RelevantRadio.com/Lent. And you'll get sent these brand new high definition videos. You can listen, you can watch, you can read, and you can learn about some of the great mysteries that take place at the Mass. Some of the little things you may not know about. What happens in the sacristy before the priest celebrates Mass? Why does he wear what he wears? Why does he read what he reads? Why does he bend over and kiss the altar? Why does he, you know, why do they pour water over his fingers? You know, what's he whisper during the Mass? I mean, that's just some of the many things that you'll get plugged into if you sign up for these Lenten lessons on the Mass. The first Lenten lesson deals with holy water, something I have in my studio here with me. I use in my home. And it's a powerful, powerful sacramental, especially against the temptation of the evil one. So learn about it. Sign up for it, okay? Tomorrow, Ash Wednesday, I'll be back. We'll dive into a lot of other issues. Pray for me, okay? When you spend some time with the Lord, I'll be praying for you a little bit later tonight. And again, we'll talk tomorrow. I can't wait to do that. It's always good to hang out with you. Cale Clark is coming up. Stay tuned for him. And we'll talk tomorrow. God bless.